This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius. Live. Fit. Go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit BestWestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
Hey guys and gals, welcome to the Oklahoma Outdoors Podcast, brought to you by Arrowhead Land Company. Here you will be educated, entertained, and equipped to get more out of your outdoor experience. So hold on tight, because here we go. What's going on, folks? Welcome to the Oklahoma Outdoors Podcast. I am your host, a very tired John Hutsmith, and welcome to the show. It has just been nonstop around here. This last weekend was Easter. We had 2 birthday parties, 2 Easters, and my sister had a baby. Right now, I'm trying to get this podcast out to you guys so that I can go hog hunting after working the last couple days. So there has just been a lot going on, but we got a really good one for you, kind of a pre-hog hunt podcast this week. We got my good buddies Nick Otto and Nate Roosevelt, 2 podcasters from the Sportsman's Empire. Mr. Andrew Muntz from the O2 podcast out of Ohio is also going to be joining us on the hunt, but he is not on this episode. Basically, Nick and Nate are driving down right now as we speak from Michigan. And so we did a mobile podcast, so I gave them a call. They were able to sync up their phones and everything, get a 3-way call going. So I do apologize. The audio is not fantastic on this one. I believe they were on the outskirts of Chicago while we did this call. And again, they were just kind of on the road using cell service and everything like that. So audio is not the best, but I think it's still pretty good and a lot of good content. And so Nick was down last year. He is the huntivore. Cooking wild game is really his thing, obviously hunting as well. And so he came down and he looked at it from more of a cooking aspect. He had heard about these wild hogs, the abundance of it, and just, you know, the kind of the stigma that they are not good to eat, which I and probably many of you grew up hearing the same thing. And so he kind of set out to prove it wrong. And I can tell you without a shadow of a doubt, he proved it wrong. He, you know, he cooked us some tenderloins while he was here from the hogs we killed. And then he took, I don't remember how many coolers of meat back. I think he took like 5 or 7 coolers of meat back and kind of took his time, processed them, you know, very professionally. He sent me some pictures of some pork chops that were fantastic. He made some bacon. I think he said he's bringing me some. Ham, pulled pork, like you name it, all from these wild hogs, and it all looked delicious. And so that was really cool. And he's coming back, and then new guy Nate, also from Michigan, coming down, and he has not been down here before. He's never hunted hogs, he's never hunted with a thermal, anything like that. Very experienced hunter, just never made it this far south to do that type of stuff. So, it was really cool talking to him. And I wanted to get his opinion on just kind of the misnomers, I guess, maybe. Just kind of like how people who aren't around hogs think of hogs. And so he talked about just kind of, you know, how tough they are and what it takes to bring them down and how destructive they are. And so it's just really cool kind of getting to hear from both these guys from two very different perspectives. I tried to fill them in and kind of educate them on what they were about to experience. So yeah, just a really, really good time. Just so you guys know, because I'm sure I'll probably talk about it after this hunt. So I got, like I said, these three guys coming down. I've had the feeders running. This time of year, we just always have more hogs in the spring. We're feeding our calves, and they love to come and, like, you know, eat the leftover grain out of the troughs. Honestly, they're rooting through the poop a little bit to dig out the grain that the cows didn't process. So it's just a really good time. Also, we're calving right now, and so we just like to get in there when these hogs are coming in thick and just kill as many as possible, if I'm being completely honest with you. No better time than now. So we're going to be hunting feeders during the day. We're going to be using the thermal at night, and we're going to go. So they're coming down Thursday, so we'll be hunting Thursday afternoon, Thursday night, Friday afternoon, Friday night, Saturday afternoon, Saturday night, and then I believe they're all heading home Sunday morning. So three solid days of hunting. And it's also just fun to get together and kind of, it's like a deer camp atmosphere, but hog hunting, which I feel like a lot of people don't really do. I think a lot of people just kind of get together, you know, hunt for an afternoon, maybe an evening, and then you go home. But this time we kind of get to hang out. Like I said, we're going to be processing a lot of these hogs, cooking a lot of these hogs. And so it's just going to be a really, really good time. So that's what we're going to be talking about on this episode. Real quick before we get into that, though, I do want to bring to y'all's attention a few things. One, I know that they just released some changes to the Oklahoma license system, which I want to talk about on a later episode after I've had a little bit more time to do some deeper research. I know they're raising some non-resident prices. I know they're combining a lot of resident licenses, which sounds pretty cool. I think it sounds like they're raising resident prices, but if you kill more than like two deer a year, it's actually going to be cheaper. They're basically combining it to where all your tags are now included with your license. I know they changed some stuff with the youth licenses. So again, I'm going to go over all that stuff in another episode after I've had some time to kind of research it and make sure that I have it all straight. So I wanted to bring that. It is also now controlled hunt application season in Oklahoma. So be sure to get those in. Check that out. Super cheap for what you can get. So be sure to do your research, your homework, and apply for those. I feel like I had one other announcement, but it's escaping me right now. So we're just going to forget it, and we're going to go ahead and jump into the episode because I still have a lot of packing, gun gathering, ranger loading, and all kinds of stuff to do so that I can go hunt some hogs, and I'm very excited about it. So, all right, that's going to do it for this intro. Y'all know what we're talking about this week, and we're going to get into the episode right now. Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's show. And today we got a mobile podcast, or at least a semi-mobile podcast. I am sitting still, but my two guests are very much mobile, headed south. Nick and Nate, how are you guys?
We are doing good. We are cruising down 94, leaving Michigan in their dust and headed to Oklahoma. So we just crossed over to Illinois a little bit ago. Doing good.
Nice.
Yep, still raining here, but by the time we get down there, we're hoping for some bluebird skies down there. But here it's going to be wonderful.
Yeah, we're supposed to have a really, really nice couple of days. I think mostly highs in the 70s. I think tomorrow night might be a little chilly into the upper 40s, and after that into the 50s. So some really, really nice weather for you guys. Before we go too far, I should let you introduce yourselves, but I don't think y'all mentioned where you're coming from, unless I just didn't hear it. Where'd y'all leave from?
We're coming from Michigan, where your lows are our highs. I think we had our high today of, I think, probably 45 or so. Yeah, actually sleet. We had a good amount of sleet coming down. Old man winter, has a tight grip on us Northerners and doesn't let go very quickly. So we got our last, I'm going to call it our last blast of winter. Hopefully spring is on the way. We do have some flowers poking up, but yeah, we're looking forward to getting down into your country. But yeah, we're both in the Mitten State. Both of us, the LP, the Lower Peninsula, kind of centered around the Grand Rapids area, maybe into the north and then maybe into the south.
Awesome. Awesome. So, two Michigan guys, one other person coming down, Mr. Andrew Muntz from Ohio. And so, we did this last year and had you guys down to do some little hog hunting. And we just had a blast, and you guys are coming down again. So obviously looking forward to it. Mr. Nate, our newcomer, how you doing over there?
I'm doing good. I'm, like I said, I'm Nate Roosevelt, and I live just about an hour north of Nick, Grand Rapids. And yeah, this 38 degrees and rain we're currently in is definitely make us enjoy the nicer weather that's coming up. And top it off, shoot some stuff. So I'm all about that.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Y'all sent me a picture a little bit ago of plenty of coolers, which is good. And I hope we can fill them. I've been, you know, running some feeders and a few cell cameras. It looks like we're going to have some targets to shoot at. So hopefully we can get on it and have some fun. And yeah, so this is just a cool little kind of pre-trip podcast. Hopefully we can do a little rundown afterwards or maybe during while y'all are here or something like that. But I just thought it'd be fun to kind of have y'all on before the hunt and kind of get your thoughts leading up to it. Like I said, Nick, you came down last year, so you know a little bit about what's going on. Nate, this is your first time. So I want to start with you, Nate. And man, there's so many ways I could go with this, but I guess my first big question is just, you know, being from Michigan, further north, no hog hunting experience. When you think of hog hunting, what do you think of?
And the first thing that comes to head, my mind for hog hunt would be YouTube videos. I mean, I cannot tell you how many hours I probably spent watching all the cool videos of pigs getting shot and crazy ways you can be done. I think Lone Star 4 is the first thing that comes to mind. yeah, so one of those things, always like, man, I'm happy we don't have hogs here in Michigan like you guys do down there, but it'd be a lot of fun to go out there and kill them. So I think most people in my friend group in my area, first thing they ask, are you gonna shoot a helicopter? I'm like, no, we're not doing that. But no, that's kind of always the outside looking in. I know I've got family members that have went, you know, went to a hog hunt, a paid hog hunt.
Yeah.
Nothing quite like this. So definitely looking forward to it. And I think I'm the kind of guy that just get together with a group of people that I've never met before, but we all have similar interests. Share camp with each other. I live for that kind of stuff, so
mm-hmm.
I'm really looking
good. Let me ask you this too, kind of just shifting it a little bit. When you just think of a hog itself, what comes to mind? Like, I remember when I was younger growing up, there weren't near as many hogs in our area, and this was kind of pre-internet and YouTube and all that stuff. And so a lot of it was just kind of rumors. So I heard all kinds of rumors about, you know, they have iron plates over their shoulders and this and that. Do you have any kind of like preconceived ideas about these hogs and maybe how tough they are or how hard they are to bring down or anything like that?
So like I grew up, my grandpa was a farmer. So I've been around pigs and, you know, domestic pigs that you raise and butcher and that kind of thing. So I've always like had a pretty good line between like the difference between like the farm pig versus the hog you can kill. And then I guess for me I just envision a pretty hardy animal that, you know, obviously it's can absorb quite the impact. I mean, you've heard stories and that kind of thing. And I've drawn a blank at what the book was, but it might have been Old Yeller book when the guy gets attacked by the hog. So that's kind of always been back of my mind, I guess, like they have tusks and they're not afraid to use what they need to. So that's probably the extent as a kid, you know, growing up, hearing about it. And the buggers will open you up if you don't take care of them. So that's kind of probably my backstory with that.
Gotcha. All right. And then this next question, I'll kind of let both of you answer. And it's still kind of on the hunting topic, but it's just about like, basically weapons and what we're going to be shooting. So Michigan, much further north, very much a, you know, rich deer hunting heritage up there. But probably not near as much, you know, rifle hunting as we may have down here. Obviously, like I said, no hogs. I want both of you to kind of talk about, you know, kind of the firepower that you either have or what you're kind of expecting down here. Like, you know, Nick, last year, I think you brought like a rifled shotgun, which I thought was awesome and could probably be a hog killing machine. But then you also like borrowed an AR. So y'all can kind of take turns. Just talk about maybe what you brought down, what you're maybe hoping to use while you're here, and just talk about firepower a little bit.
Gotcha. Yeah, I did. I brought my 870 with rifle barrel. That is my go-to deer slayer. Actually, I've worked a lot with that gun. I do enjoy that gun. It's my all-purpose. It's only taken down deer in actually the past 2 years because I haven't taken advantage of rifle season, shotgun season as much as I want to. But yeah, up in Michigan, we have a limited firearm zone. And so if you're south of that line, you're relegated to straight wall cartridges and shotgun. And that's the area that I hunt in. That's the area that I live in. And so that's where that shotgun, the 12-gauge, has always been my go-to. Mm-hmm. Bringing that down, I fully expected to use that. I got a pretty good pump to it as far as I'm ready to go with the next shot after one relatively quick. Problem is that I did feel a little undergun as far as the repetitions when it came to using an AR. And that's where borrowing one last year and having not the pump, but it going right in semi-auto, that's where I did find that if I could send a round, a well-placed round quickly and have the next one backed up by the next trigger pull, I thought that was a good choice for me to take. With the 12-gauge shotgun done a number, I think it would. I had an encounter with a boar at your place where I had a young boar come in to the feeder. My first shot was well placed, and I think if it was the 12-gauge, it would have dropped him right there. Using a smaller caliber, I couldn't remember if it was the 243 or 223.
223.
It was the 223. It took me two shots on that one, one on each side. I shot him just behind the ear on the right side. It kind of shut off his left side because he began spinning, and then I caught him on the other side to finish him off. And that's where then he dropped there at that point. I think the 12-gauge could have done the one-and-done job. I remember down there, we also tried to play with a little bit of buckshot, and I ran some buckshot through that rifle barrel. And people had talked about the halo effect, how it spins them out too far. And with our little test on that hay bale that you had out by the cottage, we could definitely attest that that does happen. It spins those things out so wide, I would have missed the hog completely. So I think going with the AR is the best route, at least I found in the setup that we're going with, having a repeatable shot quickly to put those animals down. The more thumps you can get in them, I think the better you're off you're going to be. I did buy a lower myself, built my own AR with the purpose of being a deer slash hog gun. And at that point, I'm actually making it a 350 Legend. That way I can get the straight wall cartridge benefit of being able to be used in limited zones, but at the same time, that repeatable big round going down is what I wanted to do. So borrowing a gun again this year, haven't got the build ready to go, and I thought, you know what, let the 870 rest this time. It'll sit out this time, but we'll get it back out when it comes to bringing down some water.
Nate, what about you?
So I always talk about the line. I actually live a mile south of it. So I hunt kind of around my house, and that's primarily straight wall cartridge. I have a 350 Legend, and I have a 450 Bushmaster. And then north of the line is my grandparents' property that I go up here. That's primarily where I gun hunt. And, you know, we grew up using 270, almost 30-06s, 300 Win Mags, that kind of stuff. So very familiar with, you know, farther shots, touchdown, have a touch some at 300 yards, maybe just go over. But primarily, my whitetail kills have been, sub 200 yards, maybe 225, that kind of thing. So I kind of grew up both, best of both worlds, I guess. I learned how to be proficient with a shotgun muzzleloader as a kid. Now, three ball cartridge game, it's been a game changer. So I'm bringing a 450 Bushmaster with it's like a 250 grain bullet. And I have a suppressor on it. So it brings a pretty good thump. Got a good scope. So I'm pretty confident in anything 200 yards on it. Can shoot very accurately. Then I actually have subsonics for it also, which are 395 grain bullet. And I got those shooting really good at 100 yards too. So I got some options for I got the thumper, I guess, for that, which is just essentially it's a 12 gauge, but much more accurate, a little more velocity, that kind of thing. And then I have an AR also, 223 wild, or whatever that's called. You can shoot a 5.56.
Yeah.
So I got two options. I do have a 10 millimeter pistol truck. I might have three pistols. Redneck, I got 9 millimeter somewhere and a 22 somewhere doing the truck. So
nice.
I got plenty of firepower.
Awesome.
Hopefully, we don't get too big trouble.
Man, you got me excited with that 450 Bushmaster. So like all that stuff is like foreign to me. Shotgun season, straight wall cartridges. We just know like Oklahoma, Texas, like nowhere around here has that stuff. And I've always been curious, like, they sell them down here, but just not that many people use them. But man, that sounds like a hog hammer. And I think I told Nick this last year. I was talking to my brother before everybody got there. And he was kind of asking, what people were bringing. And I told him about Nick's, shotgun with the rifled barrel. And he was like, oh my gosh. He's like, that sounds awesome. The bigger the projectile on these things, probably the better. And that's something that I've learned over time. I think a lot of people, I found it went both ways. A lot of people were like, oh, you got hogs? Like, I got, an AR-15. I'll come in. And in my personal opinion, an AR-15 is honestly a little small. Like, it works. I let Nick use it. Nick killed a hog with it. I've killed plenty of hogs with it. But it's on the smaller end. And then kind of on the other end, like, I know a lot of people are like, oh, you better bring, minimum 270. And yes, a 270 will kill a hog, but you also don't have to have a giant 270 either. Shot placement is so important on these things. And the type of bullet is also super important, especially if you're using the smaller cartridges. I prefer hollow points for sure. Like with your bigger 450, I don't think that's going to be an issue. But like if I'm going out to hunt, especially over a feeder and, if daytime hogs, my preference is actually a scoped rifle over an AR, because even if you get those pigs, out in the open or whatever, and you get a nice clean shot, as soon as that first round goes off, those things are going to scatter. Even if you're shooting suppressed, I have suppressors. I'm usually hunting suppressed. And once those things get to running, it's kind of spray and pray no matter what you're shooting. And so I prefer to have, a nice solid bolt action rifle so I can make that first shot count, kind of like Nick was talking about. And then, I've shot a bolt action enough that I'm usually pretty quick on getting a follow-up shot. Now nighttime's a different deal. When you're hunting with thermals, which we're going to be doing, or even if you're just hunting with a spotlight, then I'm all about ARs. At night, the smoke that you don't really notice in the daytime, but at night, if you're using lights or something, the smoke from that shot is going to fog up in front of your rifle, almost like you're shooting a muzzleloader, and block the light. And then that repetition is so key, because a lot of times, especially where we're going to be hunting, it's really wide open. And so with that thermal, they can't hide from you. Eventually they'll get too far, but they can't hide from you. And also at night, they tend to scatter more. Like they're a little bit more confused and they're not sure which direction to go. And so that, that repetitive being able to just shoot a lot is very, very key. So I know, Nate, you and I haven't got to talk a lot about this, but, pretty much the setup I think I mentioned is evenings we'll go set up over feeders. It'll be nice and controlled. Hopefully we have some hogs come out in the daylight. You'll be in a nice blind to be able to set up, nice and steady and everything, get a shot, and we'll hunt till dark. Go get it back to eat, come back, and then that's when we'll go out with the thermals and hunt at night. And both of them pretty awesome. And both of them have their advantages and disadvantages, but also both very, very fun. Nick, from your experience last year, you got to do a little bit of both. I think you killed a hog each way. Which one did you prefer?
Oh man, it's like trying to tell me which child I love. It's such a fun, it's just a different out of world experience to come to Michigan. He just didn't have that experience to be able to have it. I think of the one point, it was me and you in the cab, and we had Andrew and Dan in the back of the truck, and everybody has rifles pointed because they have all the scopes that are out, and we're near a dirt road, and I just kind of took a time out, looked at our surroundings, and I'm like, this would not fly anywhere in Michigan. Like, immediately someone is making a phone call that, hey, there are four people aiming guns off the back of the truck. Like, that just, it just doesn't happen in our area. And I think maybe we're missing out. But at the same time, like, being able to basically peel back the layers of night and see these critters around and see how they use the landscape, and at the same time not let them hide, and basically have them in your sights the entire time. It's such a crazy experience, almost the point of a video game, if you're hunting at night. I will say, though, you cannot see fence line in that room scope, because you guys set me up on a nice big hog, and I was ready to rip loose that shot. And the first shot that I had was this awful,
I forgot about that. I hit
the fence wire.
Yeah, barbed wire, like the thin strand of barbed wire.
Yeah, never saw it, and I'm not a tall person by any means, so I was lined up right with that top strand and just hit that sucker, and that boar took right on off. I think Andrew had a follow-up shot, or at least tried to put a couple shots on it, but that hog was gone, and he was out of there after that first shot, so I was a little disappointed on that setup. But with night hunting, shoot, the night doesn't matter. So a couple hours later, we had four of us, I think, lined up, all of our thermals facing forward, and a sound of hogs that was starting to leave the feeder. And I remember we got several hogs in that setup. Just like you said, they scattered everywhere. They were running at us, they were running away from us, they were running left, right. And it was just this whirlwind, and we were just throwing lead downrange. I tell you what, seeing the sound, I still think about that sound, those pigs squealing, and all of our rounds ripping downrange. Like, what an amazing experience that was.
Yeah.
Say all that, the controlled setup, right? I got to basically have a whitetail season, whitetail setup, in the springtime, and have a hog come into the feeder. He get to choose my shot when the pig was called, and to make the calculated squeeze of the trigger and put him down minimum on the shots. That too, I love that scenario as well. That this was a harvest at that point. It wasn't merely just a spray and pray and hope you put a trigger down, but it was a calculated shot. The animal went down and minimal feet happened on them. So I love both experiences.
Yeah. Nate, have you ever done any thermal hunting at all? Coyotes or anything?
No, I have not done the thermal game. I actually brought a light because I wasn't sure what would be it. But I've talked to coyotes at night with poverty coyotes, I call it, because I haven't jumped on the thermal bandwagon yet.
Yeah.
But I always enjoy chasing coyotes at night. I was kind of the guy where I lived. A couple spots I lived actually were kind of out in the area where I could hear coyotes at night. I was the dude that 2 a.m., 1:30 a.m., whatever. I heard coyotes, so grab the stuff and go run around in deep snow, chasing down coyotes, shooting them. So that was kind of my experience. I can tell you what, if I had a thermal when I was a younger man, that would have been a lot of things dying against me with a thermal. So yep. Pretty excited about that. But I do have a couple of questions. Mm-hmm. These setups, lines, like what kind of a range are we shooting from line to meter?
So you'll be pretty lucky because a lot of these setups are actually set up for archery. So our place, it's a large place, but most of it is just wide open cattle pasture. And the gentleman who kind of, you know, put this place back or together back in the day, I mean, it's 100% cattle ranch. Like, it's really not made to be a hunting place whatsoever. And so in 2008, this place was completely clear cut from basically front to back. And so there are very few trees, like, you know, along the creeks, they left a few trees, you know, anything that was within 2 feet of the edge for like erosion control. But for the most part, it's wide open Bermuda grass pasture. And so deer hunting, it has been very challenging for me because there's very few places I can put a stand. And so a few years ago, we invested in some blinds. And so I do most of my bow hunting on this place out of blinds. So I have a few tree stands, but most of it's blinds. So the majority of these feeders are at like 20 yards. I do at a couple of them have some like rifle blinds a little further back. The one where Nick killed his hog last year, and it's actually where I killed my biggest buck this year. I think it's 45 yards, from the blind to the feeder. I have some others that are, you know, scooted back, you know, 80 to 100 yards. For most of like Oklahoma, Texas, these, you know, hardcore feeder states or bait states, usually 80 to 100 yards is kind of like your sweet spot. Like, that's where most people are setting their bait stations up from their blinds. Like I said, Oklahoma is a very short rifle season. I'm primarily a bow hunter, and so mine are usually pretty close. And again, like I always have to remind people of this, especially when it comes to hog hunting. Like, with these hogs, we're not hunting. We are killing. Like, our goal, we are not trying to be conservative. We are not trying to be ethical. Like, the goal is to reduce population numbers. And so I did it last year. I've done it again this year. So most of my feeders are actually fenced to keep the hogs out. So I have panels that are about 30 inches high, a T-post every 8 feet. Like, that's what it takes to keep these pigs off of the feeders. In preparation for you guys, I have gone and opened the feeders up so that the hogs can get in there. And on most of them, I learned this a few years ago. I actually came up with it myself. I was pretty proud of myself. And I opened up the gate about a foot, about 12 to 18 inches, and drove a T-post in and wired it so that that gate will only open that 12 to 18 inches. And these hogs figure out how to funnel through there into the feeder pen. And basically the strategy is you just let that feeder pen fill up with hogs and then start shooting, and they have to run to that funnel, and it's just fish in a barrel at that point. Dan was lucky. Dan Matthews was down here last year, and he kind of got the lucky one. That happened to him. I think he killed four at one time in that setup. So all that to say, most of these shots are going to be fairly close. Now, from most of these setups, you can see fairly far. And these big boars especially, like, they're just always on the move. They're always running around trying to find the next sounder of sows running around. Like, they're just ready to breed at all times. And so it's nothing to see, you know, a big boar running across the pasture 200-400 yards away. And again, by all means, if you feel like it, go for it. But the majority of these shots should be pretty close, especially during the daytime. Nighttime, it's a lot more about kind of reading the terrain, the weather, the setup and everything. I don't think we've had near as many people hunting our place this year as we did last year. Last year, I felt like the pigs were a little more jumpy than average. Cause these things are smart. Like, they will kind of learn, like, they now know that people are hunting them at night. If you get on a real calm, group and it's, you know, decently windy where they can't hear real good. I mean, I've walked up to like 40, 50 yards before I started shooting at night. These bigger, smarter boars, or if it's real silent, if there's a big, I think we're actually kind of getting lucky. I don't think there's supposed to be much of a moon. If it's real bright or something, they can see a little far away. You got to get a little further shot. The big challenge at night is just judging distance, because it's dark. You know, you can't use a range finder and looking through these scopes where it's more digital, it's really hard to judge distance. So a lot of times it's like you can kind of surprise yourself by either how close or how far away it is. That's kind of part of the challenge. But like I said, especially during the daytime, more than likely you're going to be like 100 yards in.
So the AR works better at night. Ladder shoot bullet too, so off a yardage, you have a little more, I guess, leadway, or you're off will be what is 2-2-3, only drops like 2 inches from 100 to 200 yards.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty effective round, I guess, for the and the repeated fire. I mean, you have me at thermal and eradication.
Yeah.
So I'm ready.
Yeah. Yeah. The interesting part at night is you're taking a lot of running shots, which also can take some use. And that's, again, something that most people don't do a lot on whitetails. But again, here it's just like you're just trying to get them down. So like if they're running side to side, which a lot of times when you start shooting, you'll see them. They'll kind of start running everywhere because they're trying to figure out where this thing's coming from, where they need to go. And so then you're trying to figure out your lead, you know, how much to lead them by. But once they kind of figure out what's going on, a lot of times they just kind of like they pick a direction and they just run that direction. And usually that's fairly, you know, straight away from you, straight away, maybe at a little angle. And so a lot of times then you're just kind of shooting at their butts and you don't really have to worry about, you know, a lead or anything. It's just kind of yardage. So I just kind of aim top of the back if they're getting further away. But it's fun. It's all a big guessing game. It just takes a little experience. So.
Yeah. Little seat time, you know, I mean, no different than shooting like birds or waterfowl in the air,
right.
You know, what you lost all game on. I mean, you got to just get a feel where you need, the gun needs to be, and it's almost instinctual game at that point once you get the seat. So that's
right.
Pretty cool. Now, you know, you're talking about trying to, you know, eradicating or trying to keep population down. What is the like goal, like, are we targeting sows, are we targeting boars, like what is there any sort of science that says, hey, I mean, pigs breed all the time rapidly. Mm-hmm. I mean, they can breed right over, like they're not even a year old, they can breed rapidly. So like what is the most effective way that what's target, or is it not really anything? See pigs jumping.
Yes. I've done some research over that over the years, and it seems like everybody says something different. One person says you need to shoot the boars because they're the one traveling around and, you know, one boar can breed X amount of sows and blah, blah. The next guy says you need to shoot the sow because that sow is going to have 8 to 12 piglets and she can breed twice a year. So that one's going to turn into 24. I shoot whatever's there. I honestly don't know if one's better than the other. It takes two to tango, as they say. So, I was actually going to ask Nick, this is a good little segue here, kind of more going towards from the hunting side to the cooking side, which is kind of Nick's area and what he's excited about. Nick, let's say a group comes out and there's a nice 200-pound boar. Maybe you can see some tusks sticking out on each side, but then there's a nice 40 to 60-pound luscious little sow that you think would be really good on the smoker. Which one are you shooting?
Like you said, like just let the bullets fly. And as much as I don't want to be greedy, I'm gonna put a bullet down.
Yeah, yeah.
But each are gonna offer their own benefit, and you're gonna get. This is where you're gonna get people talking about if the animals being at the water, they're being angry. You're not gonna like these pigs. You don't even mess with them. Once you get past that jargon and you appreciate pig for what it is, A, being a B, being a sow, you can then go from there when it comes to preparing that pig. Would I prepare a sow the same way that I would prepare a boar, or at least have different expectations? I would. Even on the pigs that we got last year, I brought home sections of a giant sow. And I brought home sections. So I brought back a whole young bull that I had. He was not super huge, but man, he was a dense little sucker. And what I got from both of them was high quality pork. Didn't matter of sex. Fat content was big on both of them.
there was a fat gap on both of them. The main difference that I got was a bit of musk from the boar, but it wasn't like a turn off. As I would work with the meat, as I was butchering it, and the meat then got a little bit warmer, there was a bit of this like urea flavor that I got on my hands, or like the smell. After cooking, that wasn't apparent. It was only in the handling of the raw section of meat. So I'm thinking there's something in the chemistry that you're going to burn that off when it comes to cooking. But at the same time, both were very high quality pork that I was eating. I did do longer cooks with the pork, and from that I did get kind of a complex flavor. Like I made a bolognese, which is like a fancy spaghetti sauce. They get it's something you serve with pasta. There's whole steps that go to it, but that wild flavor really came out in that sauce, and it was something that really, like, when you ate it, wanted to get more of it because you're guessing at what was this note that I was like, what was I tasting here? What was I tasting there? Similar to you get on venison. So each of them have their own benefit, and come to find out, the more that I researched, trying to like figure out what to do with this, Eastern Europeans actually enjoy that musk or that boar taint. They look for the boar as desired, as opposed to the sound. Where I think like Western society, like ours, being here in the United States, corn and soybean predominant when it comes to our domestics, people are going to look for that sow to be the best taste. But in this given scenario, you put either one of those things down, have a wealth of high quality pork that's going to be anything on a grocery store shop.
I tell you what, I'll bring my 22 with my suppressor on it. It's real, real quiet, and you can go ahead and plink the little one, and then pick up the big rifle and shoot the big one. So there you go, problem solved.
Perfect. Yeah. But hey, that 30 pounder though, I did it like when we affectionately named him Squeals in the firefight that we had. We did down a couple of piglets, and I whole smoked those piglets, and you talk about tender, beautiful meat. Like it went over dividends. I brought that to a big 4th of July cookout. I did two whole smoked, piglets. I even brought the heads and left those on the tray to really like show like, yes, this was a wild pig. I was only left with the trays. And they got completely clean. I think I ended up with a total of, 26, 27 pounds total between the two piglets. But that was all pulled pork. And yeah, that party cleaned them all up. Everybody wants me to bring it back again for next year. And I'm like, well, hey, it all depends on what Oklahoma gives me. If the piglets show up, we're taking them.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right. We don't age discriminate either. So good stuff. Good stuff. Man, we've been going longer than I thought already, but what's a good closing question here? Nate, what are you most excited for in this trip? We've talked a lot about what you can expect, daytime, nighttime. If you had to pick one thing, what are you most excited for?
Thermal game is something that would be pretty exciting just because I've never done it before. And being in a different state, but I've traveled on quite a bit from whitetails mostly, but I've done some pheasant hunts and some of those things. But just being in St. Oklahoma, kind of experiencing that, so somehow I always look forward to that. Pretty cliche, you know, but it's also something I do enjoy. I enjoy looking at new ground, seeing how you whitetail hunt in a state like that that's, you know, vast and different than where I'm from, Michigan. And then, you know, the current, you know, hanging out with you guys and, you know, just having a good, relaxing time. No, not high stakes, not high pressure. Just have a good time. But man, the vision that I have in my head of shooting a pig with thermal, a lot like a lot of the videos that are around on YouTube and seeing that, I would really like to check that off my box, saying, yep, killed the big news thermal. And I feel pretty accomplished. You know, maybe not quite Mighty Hunter status, but I think it'll be something I'll definitely be able to tell my buddies and talk about for a while. And it'll probably end up being me behind a thermal down the road. So, you know, any excuse I got to justify something like that, I'm all about it.
Nice. And Nick, I'm going to answer your question for you. I was going to ask you what you're most excited for, but I already know it's teaching me how to make those awesome pork chops that you cut out last year. So congratulations. Looking forward to that. But for real, anything that you're like after, you know, being down here last year and kind of experiencing everything and now coming back, is there anything that you kind of took from last year that you're bringing this year or more excited for?
You hit the nail square on the head, John. The pork preacher is coming down to teach the good news to the folks of Oklahoma. You're sitting on a gold mine and you didn't even know it. We're going to take full advantage of these pigs. Having a chance this year to like play with different parts. Actually, coming down, I've got bacon that we're going to have one morning. In fact, my boys broke into that earlier this week, so it's coming into you fresh right now. I do have some pork chops coming. I got a couple of loins cut out that I've saved. I got a white-tailed treat as well that I'm going to share. But that's really why I'm down here is, yes, the camaraderie, the hanging out, the deer camp transitioning to hog camp is an atmosphere that I could not turn away. Thank you so much for opening up your ranch, your family's ranch, to be able to allow us to come and do this, because it is. It's a highlight of my year. And to come back and to continue to make some amazing stuff off the things that the earth provides. Shoot, we haven't done anything to these pigs. In fact, we've taken things away from these pigs. We chase them around, we're going to shoot them, and they still come. They are hardy critters, and to be able to enjoy the beautiful harvest of their pork, I think needs to be shared by everyone. So yes, class will be in session. We're gonna be doing some pork chops for you. We'll have on bone, off bone, any way you want, John.
awesome. Well, guys, I can't wait. Y'all are headed this way. I still have to edit this thing, pack, load up the Ranger, all kinds of stuff. So I'm going to let you guys go, but I will see you guys tomorrow around lunchtime, and get ready, because I think I have everything prepped. I think we're going to be ready to go, and I think we're going to have a really, really good time. So thank you guys for joining us. Nick, Nate, I appreciate it, and I will see you guys tomorrow.
Excellent. Get some rest. We're going to need it.
Thanks, guys. All right. Talk to y'all later. There we go, folks, a little pre-hunt podcast for you guys, and I did a terrible job of letting them shout out their own shows, and so I'm going to do it for them here at the end because I want to make sure they get some credit. So that was Nick Otto of the Huntivore podcast and Nate Roosevelt with the Michigan Wild podcast. Both of those are on the Sportsman's Empire, as well as this show, the Oklahoma Outdoors podcast. So be sure to check them out. Really good stuff all across the network. I lost track of how many shows we're up to, but lots of good content out there for you guys. So be sure to check that out. All right, that's going to do it for this week. Thank you guys, as always, for tuning in. I'm about to go do some packing and get ready to kill some hogs. Thank you guys for tuning in. And until next week, I will see y'all right back here on the Oklahoma Outdoors Podcast.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.